Hello and welcome to episode 29 of Special Parents Confidential. I'm John Pellegrini. We all know that special needs kids require a lot of attention. Depending upon circumstances, parents may be on the go 24 hours a day. School, therapy, medical appointments, more school, more therapy, more medical appointments. The list goes on and it can seem like an endless day of focusing entirely on your child with special needs. And that can lead to more problems if you have more than one child and if your other child or children don't have special needs. Unfortunately, whether unintentional or not, parents can cause problems by not giving enough attention to their neurotypical children. Sometimes siblings of special needs kids can have as much stress as the parents of special needs kids, but they may not be able to express their frustrations as easily as their parents, nor may they be even able to understand them. Our guest for this episode of Special Parents Confidential can speak to those concerns. Andrea Vugdeveen of Family Tree Therapies in Grand Rapids, Michigan, has been running sibling support groups for nearly 3 years. She talks about the challenges and stresses that siblings of special needs children have and how parents can help their neurotypical kids have a better relationship with their special needs siblings. I started off by asking Andrea what were some of the most common things that siblings talk about in her support group meetings.
I would say that the primary things that kids bring up stem from deep sadness / grief and concern and worry. And when we talk about their sadness and grief, it's that it hurts them when their sib is upset, when their sib is crying, when their sib is having a tantrum or, you know, visibly can't control themselves. Some of these kids are going to the same school as their sib, and they see their sib being picked on. They see their sib embarrassing him or herself or causing other people to feel embarrassed or uncomfortable because of the way that they're acting or, you know, what, or maybe it's a physical disability or something like that, that they are well aware that it is causing other people discomfort. And so there's this deep sadness for their sib. And then there's grief over relationships not being the way they want them to be. And, you know, I hear that in terms of, you know, I wish that my sib could play with me, or I wish that I could do this or that with my sib. Or, you know, some grief over wishing that their relationship with their parents could be a little different, that they could spend more time with them, that, you know, that there wasn't the jealousy over, yeah, my sib needs more care, my sib demands more time. So there's sadness and grief over those things. And then concern and worry. They have deep concern for their sib, and we did an exercise a while back in response to a video that they watched, that there wasn't a series of questions that we processed through, and they worry about their sib, both in the present, being bullied, being alone, struggling physically, emotionally, getting in trouble at school. But there is also worry, and I would say especially more as the kids get older and as they're starting to think about their future and starting to think about college for themselves or what the future might look like. But there's also concern about their sib's future and how their sib's future will impact and involve them. So those are probably the themes that come up the most on the struggle challenge side, if you would. But there's also this desire for the world to see their sibling through their eyes, and they say things like, you know, my sib is really kind. He or she is happy. You know, I loved it when one of the sibs said, you know, he has the same feelings as normal people. You know, and then someone else had said, you know, she has a heart too. And they want the world to know that their sib is loving, that their sib is a smart person, that their sib is cool. I remember one kid sharing that, you know, my sib is cool. And that, yes, there are some differences there, but the reality is that we all have our own uniquenesses, and we talk about that in sibling group as well. But this desire that the world see their sib as a human being, that definitely comes through. And yeah, are there the themes of anger sometimes, jealousy, resentment, embarrassment, loneliness? Absolutely. But I would say so often these kids, not that they don't share the struggles, not that they don't share the challenges, but because we focus equally as much on some of the joys, some of the blessings that come from having a sibling with special needs, they naturally do that as well. And I have a couple kids in particular where, whether it be because their home environment is very open, whether it be that they just really understand what's going on with their sibling, I'm sure there's a myriad of reasons why, but these kids, their natural response to talking about their sibling is in a positive light. And I would say that that is true, you know, for a lot of kids, that they also see what's good in their SIB, and they understand the bigger picture. And so although SIB group offers them an opportunity to talk about what's hard and what's challenging, it's also a place where we celebrate the uniqueness and the things that are special about having a SIB with a special need as well.
Well, I think what you said, too, it's about the environment at home and how the parents approach the whole thing. You know, the kids are going to model what they think about and how their parents are dealing with things as well.
And in light of that, I thought it might be helpful to just share a few, I don't know if you want to call them tangible tips/opportunities that I think parents can adopt and implement that can create that kind of environment at home and create that and foster an environment where kids are feeling like they understand what's going on with their sibs, that there is open communication and honesty. And so I wondered if I could just share some of these
sure.
tangible opportunities with you.
Sure, that'd be great. That'd be great. In fact, maybe what I'll do, too, is write those down and put them on a PDF form that we can have people download if they want.
Sure, yeah, okay. That would be great.
All right.
And I guess I want to say on the front end that these tips, if you will, or these opportunities are ongoing, and they don't have to be done all at once, because I know that being a parent, period, is hard and challenging, and there's lots going on, and I always want to be cautionary when I share things like this, because it's not like you have to do this or else. It's just like, here are some things to keep in mind that I think are going to encourage and equip your children as they continue to journey alongside their sib with special needs. Because the reality is that they're going to be journeying alongside their sib. They're going to have the longest relationship, most likely, you know, with their sib. And so I think it's just the more that we can equip, the more that we can encourage these kids, the better.
Sure.
And so
we'll call them suggestions then. How about that?
Yeah, suggestions. Yes, okay. Absolutely. Suggestions. Yes. So the first one would be to provide accurate, age-appropriate information for neurotypical children, if you will. Because without it, children will often create their own explanations. Or they will wonder, and I've actually heard this, they will wonder, can I catch it? Or will it be something that I'm going to develop as I get older? Or there is often sometimes this feeling of guilt that they were spared. Like, why did my sib have to get this? Or why were they born with that? And why am I okay? And then not being able to respond to peers or adults who say, what's wrong with your brother or sister? Or why do they do that, right? Because they hear that, especially from their peers. They're going to hear that. That can cause a lot of anxiety for kids. And so the more that children can articulate about their sib, the more courage then I believe that they're going to be able to have to advocate for and then be able to highlight what is good and beautiful about their sib. Because we all know that children with special needs are so much more than that. And when kids can help the world see, you know, like I talked about earlier, what is good, what is beautiful, what they love about their sib, that's so important, and it's so good for them to be able to do that. And so I think if, you know, and that's what I've seen in these couple kids where, you know, they are hard-pressed to find something that's really hard or challenging about life with their sib, and I think part of it is because they are very aware and their home environment is very open, and so they know what's going on. They're part of walking alongside their sib in ways that are positive. So that would be the first one, the providing accurate, age-appropriate information. And then The second one is providing age-appropriate information about the future. And I sense this wondering, this anxiety, this worrying concern about the future more as the kids get older. But they are concerned about their kids' future. What happens when they're older? Who will care for them when mom and dad aren't around? What role will I need to play? And, you know, you talked about an older sib earlier, but I have a 35-year-old friend for whom this is a huge concern. And in her case, her parents are choosing for likely a variety of reasons, but they're not making plans for her sister with special needs, and it's causing anxiety and frustration and concern. I would say even anger, because she knows that her parents aren't going to be around forever, and she has her own family and children, and she loves her sister, but her sister is not going to be able to live independently, and so she just wishes that there could be more openness and understanding, because it is an ongoing struggle for her, and she doesn't want to always push her parents, you know, or always be, you know, trying to bring it up, but she would have a lot more peace if she knew that there were some things in place and that, you know, as adult children, that they could be part of whatever plans are being made for their sister when their parents aren't around. So I think that, none of us like to talk about not being around, and yet the reality is that we're not going to be here forever. And so, how can we do that in age-appropriate ways and just talking? And it was even interesting in my older sibling group a couple months ago, we were doing some exercise, and through that, one of the boys was mentioning how they had just had a conversation come up about college, and he was always concerned that my sib, who has autism, is not going to be able to go to college, but they're exploring different possibilities for her, and I think that gave him a lot of even peace, knowing that, okay, there's more to come for my sib. It's not just going to end at high school, but there are opportunities down the road for her. So if I go off and I get to explore and I get to be independent, I know that there are some avenues for her as well. And I think that gave him a lot of peace, but it also gave him peace that his parents were open to talking about it and to sharing with him some of the opportunities that are out there. And so that was really helpful. And that led to conversation with another sib who's, you know, brother has cerebral palsy, and there are options for him as well. And I think, again, the more open you can be, the less anxiety there will likely be, because everything's out on the table and it can be talked about. So the next one is, and I think this is a really important one too, is the providing a safe place to grieve. Because as I mentioned earlier, sibs share deep sadness over the different life that their sib has, and, you know, for some of them will likely have all their life, a very different life from what they're going to be able to live. So sadness that maybe they won't be able to go to college, or maybe they won't be able to play sports, or won't be able to get a job, or won't be able to experience life the way they themselves are dreaming of. And so I think it's important for them to be able to talk about this with their parents, and for them to know that for them to know that their parents are open to hearing. Because I think what I also sense with kids that come from families where there's a special needs child is that they don't want to burden their parents. They don't want to cause their parents to feel any more sadness, and so they're not going to, maybe in some families they do initiate, but a lot of times I don't think kids are going to initiate it themselves. And so I think it's important for parents, whether it be to even share their own struggles, their own sadness, again, all age appropriate, and everybody knows their kids best, but just to be able to say, you know, it's hard, and I'm sad too, and I have wishes. And I think it validates, it normalizes, it decreases anxiety. And I think then again, on the flip side of that, then what can happen is that it can also be a time where conversations about all the things that the sib can do and all the successes that they have had, you know, because celebrating small successes in life, period, is important. And I think especially when we're talking about having a sibling with special needs, just be able to celebrate all those all those little things. Like maybe we had a great outing to the restaurant today. We're going to a restaurant is really hard for Timmy, but today he did great, and it was wonderful to just be able to go out as a family. And I think, yeah, you not only are you acknowledging that, yeah, it is hard, and it has been hard in the past, but it went really well today, and we're just so thankful. And so, yeah, I think it's very important for them to have a place at home where they can talk about what they're feeling and feel safe about it. And like I said, I think it's so important for parents to initiate these conversations, because lots of times children aren't going to initiate it on their own. And I still think, especially as kids get older and they get into their teenage years, they tend to, you know, clam up and not share a lot about their feelings, period. And it's not about pressing them. It's not about, you know, making anybody share. You can't make anybody share, but just saying, hey, if you ever want to talk about it, or, you know, this was really hard, how did you feel about it? I think just making sure those lines of communication are open are going to be huge for decreasing worry, anxiety, guilt, and just normalizing feelings.
Yep, that's very important. You got to let the kids know that they can talk about things, because, like you say, they do clam up. I've got a 13-year-old, or at least she's 13 as of the point of this recording, and she, you know, she would struggle with this probably. Are there any other suggestions you have?
Yeah, I guess the other thing that I would share is the importance of helping your neurotypical children be themselves, acknowledging their individual needs, and making sure that there are opportunities for them to discover, to explore their gifts, all those sorts of things. Because I think that sometimes maybe kids don't get to do certain activities or go certain places because of the siblings, the sibling with special needs, and maybe their challenges, and it just makes it difficult. And so is there a way, if there's something that you know is important to your child, is there a way for you to allow them to do that activity or go to that place, whether it be with you and not your sibling, or not with the child with special needs, or can they go with somebody else, so that there is that freedom for them to come into themselves. And so often kids who have siblings with special needs, I think they stay below the radar. They don't want to burden their parents. Sometimes they don't ask for what they really want because they feel like it's just going to be one more thing and one more thing. So do you want to back up?
No, that's okay. We're going good. I think, yeah, it's like you say, they don't want to burden their parents. They don't want to be an annoyance. They know how stressed out everyone is. And so what the parents need to keep in consideration is the fact that they have more than one child. And even though the one child requires a lot of help, other kids have their own needs as well. And it's just a balance, trying to find that balance of being able to fulfill everybody. Well, are there any signs that you can look for to determine if a sibling of a special needs child is having some stress or issues with their relationship with their parents and their sibling who has special needs?
You know, I was thinking about this, and I think the reality is that there's going to be stress and challenges within families, period, right? That's just the reality. And I think then when you add a child with special needs, it just adds this other layer. And so I think encouraging parents in general is to pay attention. And obviously, our desire is to know our children so that we can be aware when things feel a little off. But I think especially when in families where there is a child with special needs whose needs may be more urgent, you know, because of what's going on with them, or maybe more demanding, is to be paying attention to any slight changes you may see. Like, I have one girl that it could just be that she's going into adolescence, and it could be that things are just getting harder at home, but I have sensed that she's becoming more withdrawn. She's quieter. She doesn't talk as much. You know, and for some, it's the anger. I have another girl who is very, very angry right now. And so I think that is definitely a sign that there are things going on that she is struggling. Some, which I'm sure she's a very verbal girl, so I'm sure she's verbalizing at home as well. But so withdrawn, I think anger, maybe at a different level, maybe it's wrapped up, ramped up, and maybe it's more often. And I think maybe for some kids, it's maybe they're acting out more, and that's their way of trying to get your attention. And I think if the parents are in tune, and if they can respond, I think that's a better word, but if they can respond as, you know, as close to the time in which it's happening as possible, I just think it's helpful. And first, you know, if someone is angry, if your child is angry, maybe you can't fully address and have that conversation right at that moment, but maybe it's just a hand on the shoulder and saying, I know what your sibling is doing is really frustrating for you right now, and I'm aware and I'm on it, you know, and then maybe you can talk about it more later and come up together with some strategies or how we can handle it. Again, it's that open communication. I think it's acknowledging, I'm seeing this, I'm sensing this, I'm wondering this, and whether or not the kids are going to, what they're going to say in response, you never know. But I think if as a parent, you're letting kids know that you're sensing something is going on, I think is really important so that they don't feel like, okay, here I am angry and mom's not even, you know, not even responding or not even acknowledging that there's something going on inside of me. So I just think that that's important for them to know in the moment, okay, mom knows that I'm struggling and mom's acknowledging, and maybe we're going to talk about it more later, but at least I feel like I'm being seen and that my feelings count too.
And that's really, I think, a lot of it, too. How does a sibling support group work? Is it kind of like an AA meeting where you're sitting around in a group and everyone tells their personal story, or is it, does it work out differently?
It does. It works out differently, yes. So we meet for an hour and a half once a month, and there is a peer support component that is sandwiched in the middle, but I feel it's very important to do groundwork before you can have the peer support piece, because if kids don't know each other, if they don't feel comfortable and safe with each other, the peer support is not going to happen in the most helpful way. And so we always start by getting to know each other a little bit. I would say almost every month we have somebody new coming, or maybe it's someone that hasn't been there for a few months. And so we spend some time getting to know each other. We spend some time, as strange as this may sound, but getting to know each other's names, because names are so important. And so we learn names, we learn a little bit about each other. We do some team building stuff so that we get comfortable with each other. We feel like we can trust each other. And then we move in to peer support. And at the younger level, the peer support often starts around a book, and that book is a launching pad. And there are some wonderful books, and I'd be more than willing to send you an email with some of the books that I have used.
Sure.
And they're a launch pad for conversation. And so we, you know, and often we'll have a snack at sibling groups, so snack will be passed out, and then I will read the book while they're eating their snack, and then we'll have conversation about that. Sometimes the book will lead into an activity that we'll then talk about. So there's this book called All My Stripes, and fabulous book. It's focused on a zebra who has autism, but it's so much more than that, and I think it's a fabulous book for kids. But anyway, it talked about how this little zebra said that he feels like all everybody sees is his autism stripe, and then his mom said, well, I see this stripe and this stripe and this stripe in you. And so we ended up doing an activity together where they did a zebra for themselves and a zebra for their sib. So what are the stripes you see that make up your sib, and what are the stripes that make up you? And we just had some wonderful conversation about that. So books are what I primarily use with the younger group, and then we often do a Dear Blabby exercise, which has been so wonderful. So Dear Blabby is like Dear Abby, and Dear Blabby gets questions from children and youth who have siblings with special needs, and she is coming to the group saying, I need your help to respond to these questions. So these are real-life situations that the group, then, the sibling group, gets to come up with responses to, and that's a wonderful way for them to learn from each other. There was a time where I think the question was, I just moved and I want to have some of my new friends over to my house, but I'm concerned about my sib with special needs, how are they going to respond? And ultimately the question was, should I tell my friends ahead of time? And what should I tell them? And there was one girl in the group who said, you know, this is something my mom and I talked about before. I had some new friends over a while back, and we decided ahead of time what we were going to tell my friends. And it was just really neat to hear that this was something that had played out in an actual family. And so to be able to have her share that and then to have conversation about that was really great. So younger sib group, we do Dear Blabby, we do a book/activity, and then there's also some other just fun interactive activities that we do that gets at some questions around peer support. And then on the older group, we did start last year doing a book, working through a book called Rules, which I would highly suggest for families who have children with special needs. Again, although that this book is focused around a girl who has a sib who has autism, there are just so many themes and so many insights that are, I think, work across the board for families who have children with special needs. The hard thing about that is if a child is missing, it's hard to work through a book when you don't have a consistent group of kids every time. And so we've done there's some wonderful YouTube videos that have served as a launch pad for conversation. Again, we'll do some activities that get them interacting, and then, you know, with the purpose of peer support. So those are primarily some of the tools that I use for the peer support piece. And then we'll usually end with something fun before we leave. But the question that we have ended SIB group with for the last while, we circle up and I say, all right, complete the sentence. I am glad I came to sibling group today because, sometimes it's, I had a lot of fun, I got to see my friends, but most of the time it's like, I know that I'm not alone, because I know that there are people here who understand what it's like to have a sib with special needs, because it's my special place to go and just be myself. And I think for some of these children who have sibs with significant needs, I mean, they're going along to therapies and doctor's appointments, and so much of life does, understandably so, center around their sib with special needs. But this gets to be something that's just their own, that's fun, but also offers that piece where they get to connect with kids who understand what it's like to have a sibling with special need, and it's a safe place for them to talk about both, you know, what's good, what's positive, the blessings, some of the funny things that come from having a sib with special needs, but also to be honest about what's hard. So that's just in essence what we do at our monthly meetings.
That's great. Now, you know, your sibling support groups, you have them starting as young as age 6. Now, some people might think that 6 would be too young to be concerned with these problems, but that's really not the case, is it?
It's not. And sure, the older kids are, the often the more able they are to articulate what they're thinking and feeling. And I think this is a perfect example of why 6 is not too young, is I had a mom call me a few weeks ago who is interested in her son coming to our sibling group. And she was sharing with me, and he's 6, and she was sharing with me how towards the end of the school year, his friends were saying, your sibling is freaky. And then they were saying, your whole family is freaky. And here's this 6-year-old boy who I'm sure is just trying to navigate school and life and friendships, which is hard enough in and of itself. And then you have a sibling who other people are picking up on has some differences, some challenges. In this case, the boy has autism, and I'm not sure how significant the autism is because I have not met him yet. But so here's a 6-year-old boy that's already experiencing, okay, people are looking at my brother and saying he's freaky, he's different, and they're attributing that stereotype of freakiness to my family. And so, yeah, and even though we have as young as 6-year-olds coming in, they are so able to share both what's good and what is hard. And this is a place where they keep wanting to come back. And it's, you know, I tell people on the front end, like, this is not meant to be therapy. There are definitely situations in which, you know, professional counseling is going to be helpful for kids who have siblings with special needs. Do our sibling groups have therapeutic benefits sometimes? Absolutely. I mean, to know that you are not alone, to have your feelings validated and normalized is therapeutic, period. We all need that. But it's a place where they enjoy coming. It's a place where they can have fun and be themselves and be honest and be around other people who get it. And I think that is so important.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to what is said and what the kids are going through, are the parents told what their kids are saying in the support group meetings? Or if not, how do the kids learn to cope with their situations and also the parent factor?
Yeah, I would say no. We usually say that what's shared in group, stays in group. It's not something that is shared. Although this is not like formal counseling, the kids need to know that they can be open and honest and not feel like it's going to get back to their parents. However, and this has not happened yet, but if there were something that were to come up, or if there were some things going on that I was really concerned about for a kid, I would definitely say to the parent, maybe just in general terms, so-and-so, I just feel like they're getting more and more withdrawn, or I'm just experiencing a lot of anger, and just talk with them about it and maybe suggest professional counseling. For example, there was a young woman who I have met through Calvin College. She has a sibling, an older sibling with special needs, and I got to know her in this past year, and she ended up writing a blog, and in that blog, gave a little bit of history, what it was like growing up with her brother and his disability. And she talked about what was helpful when she was growing up and what would have been helpful. And one of the things she did say was counseling. She wished that had been offered. And in her case, she didn't even talk to her friends or was not even very open about having a sibling with special needs until her first year of college. And part of that was because she was so torn between how do I help my friends understand my brother and the complexities of him and not be afraid of him, because in this sense he could get aggressive and he was just a big guy and there were times where he was just out of control. So how do I help him understand what he's dealing with, but see beyond that what I see and the beauty that I see in my brother and all the things that I love about him. And so I think she would have said, I wish I had had a sibling group. I wish they had been available to me, that I had had this place to talk about it, because it wasn't until she met a youth pastor at her church who also had a sibling with special needs that she was able to open up and talk about it and found then a way to feel like she could share about the complexities of her brother without feeling like she was betraying him. And I think as you get older, I think, as a child, there's maybe anger, resentment, jealousy, all those things kids feel in general when they don't get as much of their parents' time or when things aren't fair. But I think as we mature and as we get older, then I just feel like it was so eye-opening for me to hear Aubrey share, I didn't want to betray my brother, and so I just didn't talk about it because I didn't know how to do it. And I think for her, her family ended up having to make the decision to have her brother go to a group home because it was not safe for him to be at home. And so then there was this whole other layer of feeling like she didn't know how to approach her parents because her parents were so sad and were grieving themselves, feeling like, they let their brother down or their son down, and knowing that it was so hard to only have him come home for short visits and stuff. And so there were so many dynamics. And, yeah, she said, a support group would have been helpful, professional counseling, and just even more openness that home could have been a safe place for me to share both the highs, as she described it, and the lows, and for us to be able to walk through it together more instead of feeling like I had to kind of navigate this on my own. So I just think, in light of your question, yes, I don't share with parents specifically what kids say, but if I'm sensing something that I think might need to be addressed more fully, I would definitely let a parent know that, because I think that that's important. The second part of your question is, how do kids learn to cope with their situations and their parents? And I think, well, first and foremost, I would say they learn from each other, and that's what the whole peer support part of this is all about. And I think that, even like I said, the activity, the Dear Blabby activity, I think to be able to see themselves as the experts, that they get to give Dear Blabby some advice on how to respond to this question that has come through, has just been really a beautiful thing. And I think there's such a sacredness that happens in those moments, because these kids are realizing, I can speak to this. I've experienced this. And then, you know, other conversation ends up happening, based on that. Again, like any of these activities just serve as a launch pad for conversation and connection and support. And I think that the other thing I would say is that, you know, I am constantly encouraging kids to share with their parents, and, you know, saying, you're reminding them that their parents care about them and their parents want what's best for them. And they know that deep down in their souls, they know that. But I'm also encouraging them to be open and honest with their parents as much as possible. And again, but then I would say to the parents that are listening, please do that for your kids. Please, as much as you can, you know, in as you can, initiate conversation and be open and honest, and let your kids know that this is a journey that you guys are taking together, and that you're loving, you know, the SIB with special needs together, caring together, not in a way that puts undue pressure on the kids, but just say this is a team effort.
Well, I think it's important that parents, you know, we have to take a step back and realize, okay, yeah, it's very hard for us as parents, but we, through adulthood and experience, are possibly better able to handle some of this stuff than our kids are. And it's an entirely different process for kids, especially younger ones, on how to approach this and how to handle it, because it is very emotional.
It is. Yeah.
Is there anything else? I mean, I was just saying what you said here was great, because my next question was going to be, if there was one thing you could say to parents of a special needs child about their kids and how to deal with these issues, what would you say to them? And I think you kind of addressed that, but is there anything else that you would add on to that that parents should really try to keep in mind when they're dealing with their siblings?
Sure. Yeah, no, I think the only thing that I would add, in addition to open conversation, and again, within that, I think it's just so important to have that balance. Like, those conversations don't always have to be about what's hard and the struggles, but it also needs to be about celebration. And I love it when kids and sibling group celebrate the small successes. Like, my brother got one of his braces off his legs, and it was so fun to see him walking around without it. Or my sib took his first bite of food on his own, or, you know, whatever it may be, or they passed a test at school that we didn't think that they were going to pass. Like, that is so important to celebrate and to make it a family celebration, because, like I said, these kids desire what's best for their kids. And, you know, sometimes in sib group, you know, one of the questions will be, what's a wish you have for your sib? And they want the best. And so initiating conversation and being open and being proactive about some of the things that children might be concerned about or burdening themselves with, that burden could be lifted if it was talked about, and if they knew that their parents are thinking ahead and you know, and their parents are being open with them, is so helpful. But to make sure that, you know, the celebration comes in and the focusing on what's good, right? It's like life in general. Life looks a lot better when we can also focus on the good and the beauty and the blessing. That perspective is so helpful. The support groups, I think if you can find a support group near you, it can be such a gift. And I know that on the siblingsupport.org website, there is a place to find out about sibling groups around the country. So that would be a great place to look. And the Sibling Support Project is also a great place for resources. And I believe they even have maybe some places where older kids can connect online with other SIBs around the country, possibly even around the world. So I think that that is great because there's lots of online resources. And the other thing would be is there, like I said, there are some great books out there, and I have even read a couple of books that some of my older sibs have shared with me that have just helped me as I'm trying to understand what it's. I don't have a sib with special needs, so trying to understand their world. There's just some fabulous resources out there that parents can use, like we do, as launch pads for conversation and openness and just being a listening ear to what our kids are feeling and experiencing.
That's great. And we'll put up links to those sites on the page with this interview on our website, so that way people can find those things. And I think you're right. I think it's just trying to keep conversations going and just let the kids know that you're concerned about them and you want them to feel like they can talk to you as a parent. I think that's probably the most important thing that parents can do.
And especially if they know that when they do that, that they're not burdening you, because I think that's, they are protective of parents. And like I said earlier, I think a lot of my experience, even though kids would not overtly say this, a lot of the kids in my group are trying to stay below the radar, trying not to make life any harder for their parents, not adding any more stress or burden, or not even to make their parents feel worse. Like if I tell mom that I wish that she would spend more time with me, then I'm going to make mom feel that much more sad or feel that much more burdened. They don't want to do that. And so even as we recognize that every child in every family needs special one-on-one time with parents, what are there ways that you can do that with your neurotypical kids? And again, it doesn't have to be big things. So many times I think in life we put pressure on ourselves as parents that we have to make so many special things big, but maybe it's just a few minutes before bed where we're connecting and we're processing the day, or maybe it's just going out for coffee every now and then, or something small, but just to let kids know that I value spending time just with you. I value knowing what you're thinking and feeling, and this is so good for me too as a parent when we get to spend time together. That's a gift. It's a gift for any child.
Well, I really appreciate it, Andrea. I think everything that you had here is fantastic, and it's just the kind of stuff we were looking for.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Well, I as I mentioned when we chatted earlier, it has been such a privilege for me to enter into this work of facilitating peer support groups, and I realize that I am being invited into a pretty sacred space with them. And it's not that it's always heavy. It's not that it's that it's always about the peer support, but we have fun together, we build relationships together, and then as a result of that, I get to be privy to some pretty special moments where kids are connecting, where kids are sharing, where kids are being open, and I think that it has been a gift for me, but it's also been a gift for kids, and I think for them to know that they're not alone. I mean, that's a general thing for people. As human beings, we want to know that we're connected, that we belong, that we're heard, that we're understood, that our feelings matter. And I think there's something, especially as kids get older, for that to happen within the peer context. But I think there's one other thing that I think can be also tricky for kids that have siblings with special needs is the whole friendship realm, and I think especially as kids get older, and I have sensed this with some of my kids, that I think either friendships and forming friendships can be a little trickier because they're not quite sure how to navigate the whole, I have a sibling with special needs, he or she goes to my school, I feel different, I feel like I stick out, or they tend to form friendships, and that this is not bad, but they tend to form friendships if they can find other kids that have siblings with special needs that kind of where they tend to navigate towards. And so, yeah, I think if nothing else, this is a place for some friendships to develop. And whether or not these kids decide to connect outside a sibling group or not is totally up to them. But they know that there are other people out there that get it. And I think that's a gift for me to experience and to be a part of. But I know it's a gift to them. And I know that the parents that I hear from are just really appreciative of this time and space that they can provide for their kids as well.
My thanks again to Andrea Vugtevien of Family Tree Therapies for talking to us about sibling support. All the websites she mentioned are linked to the page for this episode on our website, Special Parents Confidential. The list of those links is also available in a PDF format with the book title she talked about, as well as the amazing Letter to a Child of a Sibling with Special Needs. As we always do at this point, a reminder that if you like this episode of Special Parents Confidential or any episode we've done, please share our site with your friends, family, and all your connections on social media. You can do this easily with the social media buttons on our website. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, add us on Google+, Tumblr, LinkedIn, Pinterest, StumbleUpon, Reddit, or any of the other social media sites that you use. You can also sign up for our email service and have new posts and podcast episodes delivered right to your inbox the moment they're available online. We're also on iTunes, Stitcher, and PodDirectory as a free subscription. And if you have a moment, please feel free to write a review about our podcast. Anything you can do to help spread the word about Special Parents Confidential will help us to be able to continue these podcasts. And that's it for this episode of Special Parents Confidential. I'm John Pellegrini. Thanks for listening.